Hey guys, what are we talking about? Did we decide
was
this?
Was that the
Do we know?
Well, we brought an expert in to talk about the movie Twilight, the Twilight Saga: New Moon.
The Flophouse's wacky neighbor, Chris Weitz, is back with his crazy movie.
Now wait, I just want to double check. So we've officially started the episode.
Yeah,
despite
sure,
not announcing
not?
The show or who we are or any of that stuff?
Hey, everyone, this is The Flophouse. It's a podcast about bad movies normally, but on off weeks we do many episodes that are a lot looser, and sometimes we start without Elliot knowing. And I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin. Loving, this new WTF with Marc Maron style of starting and just kind of rolling on into it.
And I'm Hallie Hagland.
Joining us is Hallie's star of the show, Hallie Hagland.
how many times has Hallie been on the show? When does one reach the Hagland line?
Oh boy.
Wow. You're gonna need a lot more.
When do you get a Hallie jacket?
I mean, it's gotta be over 10.
Really?
Wow.
But is it under 20, do you think?
Yes.
Okay. So in there.
So it's not Hallie Hagland, it's our wacky neighbor, Chris Weitz, joining us again.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned on the show that, you know, now that I've heard all of the episodes, I fall asleep to your guys' voices every night? And have I creeped you out with that ever before? And somehow no other podcast will do anymore. For a while, I listened to that strange Australian paranormal podcast, Strange Universe.
Uh-huh.
But it has to be The Flophouse.
I have a soothing voice. Everyone said it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's like the sound of silk being dragged through butter is the way that my voice has been described.
My brother described it as exactly like the voice actor who portrayed Howard the Duck in 1984's Howard the Duck.
Mm-hmm. That quote is on my headshot, by the way, now.
Or is it? It's 86, right?
86, yeah. That was my...
Because I was like, Elliot was like 4 years old when that movie came out.
I didn't see it in the theaters.
My brother is undeterred.
My future self went back and recorded it.
Mm.
Okay.
At the same time that I was being my own father and mother, I also recorded the voice track for Howard the Duck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I also listen to podcasts to go to sleep. I find the voices of humans comforting, no more than... now, as the world is falling apart, I like to know that people somewhere are talking about something that I can kind of pay attention to and kind of then just zone out and drift off to.
And I'm pretty sure I've seen Dan tell those podcasters that you do that. So, Chris, you shouldn't feel weird at all. I feel like Dan's done that.
I mean, if I could find the sound engineer who put together 100 spooky Halloween sound effects and tell him... how much help it's given me falling asleep, those chain rattles, creaky doors, witch cackles. I would.
It has the opposite effect. Instead of scaring you silly and keeping you up.
Oh, no. It just lulls me to sleep. Because I love, there's nothing more comforting to me than knowing that I'm watched over by an evil ghost, a witch, perhaps a murderer of some kind, you know, that I'm not alone.
You know,
Elliot's a Beetlejuice.
as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing more scary than a creaky door or a bubbling cauldron, because if I hear those, I'm like, I got to get up and oil that door and turn off that cauldron.
Yeah. No, I like it. It just makes me feel like I'm in a place that's well-lived and well-loved. Stuart, you referred to me as a Beetlejuice. I'm actually a Beetlejew, which is a Jewish person who, if you say their name three times, they show up. So
okay.
I'm not sure you should refer to Jews as Beatles.
But two of the Beatles were Jewish. John Lenowitz... and
Ringelstein star.
Ringelstein star.
Yeah. Sorry, I said something as if I had an idea of where we're going, but I think Elliot probably actually does, and he was also making a noise.
I was wondering. So Stuart said, "Hey, for this episode, why don't we get our good friend and wacky neighbor Chris, who falls asleep to our voices every night, much like Kramer probably does on Seinfeld, listening to Jerry, I assume having sex with his parade of anonymous girlfriends who will never be seen again on the show.
They cannot live up to his standard, his exacting standard.
And Stuart was like, let's talk to Chris about these Twilight movies and like what it's like to make a Twilight movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that the plan? Great, I'm in. Let's do it.
I was like, is Chris actually going to want to like talk about his like Hollywood experiences, or is that verboten? Like that is.
I mean,
that
we could ask. We could ask about producing Columbus. I'd be equally as interested to hear about that.
I'm all about that. Yeah. I know the fans want to hear about it. Columbites? No, not Columbites.
No.
listen, without I don't have anything but Hollywood experiences. My life is Hollywood all the time. I just
Hollywood whites. They call them Holly whites.
it's nothing but lunch at the Ivy and other things that people do in Hollywood. I think.
Mm-hmm. My idea, even living in Los Angeles for a couple years now, my idea of Hollywood is still a guy in a convertible car wearing suspenders and a suit, and he's got a ponytail and a big, like, Zach Morris block cell phone in his hand and little sunglasses. And he's yakking about deals and who's ankling who and how are you going to package this?
You're literally just describing what you're seeing on Chris's camera right now.
I'm actually doing this as I drive down Sunset Boulevard. I don't care.
Chris
I'm
is talking I'm about
just
a
snorting
a
cocaine.
Skein.
I'm talking about Bafo B.O. And I don't
Oh, yeah. whether this picture has legs.
And later tonight, when you fall asleep to the sound of our voices, your bed is going to transform into a giant Hollywood Walk of Fame star, and you're going to fly over the giant Hollywood sign.
Oh, wow, that's going
to
be great.
Well, I was about to say that my vision of Hollywood as well was, like, informed by movies for so long, and so I was just like, oh, Hollywood is just the Chinese theater and the Walk of Fame. And then the first time I went out to L.A., I was just astounded to see what a tiny place that is.
Outside that theater, the big stars hang out. Batman, Elmo... All of them. SpongeBob. They're
John
all there.
Travolta. John Travolta and the fan.
All
there.
Yeah, the famous character of English Bobby. Yeah, what's your Hollywood experience like?
My E-True Hollywood story?
Yeah.
Well,
because fame, ain't it a bitch?
Oh,
I'm quoting A.J. Benza.
I find that with more money, more problems.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that before, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I just thought of it. As you guys may know, first of all, there's only one movie studio left in Hollywood, which is Paramount, which is the old, you know, one that was always there. So Hollywood actually isn't very Hollywood, and it's kind of ragged and beaten up. I don't know. I mean, my experience was coming out with my brother in 1990, I think. And writing on a lot of movies that never ever got made, and then our first credit was a production polish on a very Brady sequel.
Oh, that's a movie that I watched just a few years back. I watched both of the Brady movies.
God,
because like it was like
because Dan had seen every movie ever made and went to, and decided to start back around again.
So circle back and watch those movies for a second time. No,
our tale begins with a giant platter full of pot brownies.
I wish. It was just like, it was during that period when I was living alone and at my saddest, and I was just like, oh, these movies are on Hulu or whatever service. That perhaps that will be exactly the flavor of undemanding fun that I am looking for at this moment. And you know what? They were. They're funny. They're funny movies.
I feel like that's a hole in the streaming service options. There isn't one that is dedicated exclusively to sad men.
I don't know. There's a number of online streaming sites that are devoted exclusively to what sad men want to see.
Like sad, lonely men. I don't think so, Elliot.
No, it seems like there's
short films.
Very short films, yeah. Most of them shot on video, DV,
nice.
Actual film.
Kind of Dogma 95 type.
Yeah, a lot of Nat Sound. Very Nat Sound.
Mm-hmm. All in the same prefabricated mansion, too. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the studio.
But what if I was a sad guy that also had a fantasy that I was some kind of, I don't know, pizza delivery fellow? Would there be an option for me?
Like you got a fellowship to be in pizza delivery?
Yeah, yeah. He's a Domino's scholar. Can you explain for the audience, Chris? You said a production rewrite. What is that?
Production rewrite is when they're just about to make a movie and they realize in a cold sweat that it's not, that the script is just not going to cut it. Which, as you can imagine, given the movies that are made, how bad things must be at that point where they actually decide to rewrite it. My brother and I were brought in.
And how did you meet your brother?
That's actually amazingly, someone asks us that once in a meeting. in all seriousness, he also said during that meeting that a script which was about a boy who was raised by whales and ended up winning the Olympics was based on a true story. As he tried to pitch
something. Now, did he believe that, or he thought you were dumb enough to believe it?
Yeah. I prefer to think the former. And based upon his other remarks, I think I'm right.
Now, that movie got made.
And speaking of about a boy, that turned into the screenplay for About a Boy.
Did. It's one of these crazy stories where like a movie gets rewritten completely unrecognizably.
The original title was
about a whale.
Boy. It was called About a Whale Boy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were having so much trouble with it, and then you and your brother stepped in and you said, "Here's our pitch," and you just crossed out the word whale, and they went, "We're listening."
Let's go back to basics, guys.
Yeah.
People don't want to see movies about whales. They want to see movies about boys. What about Free Willy? Had a boy in it.
See, that's what Chris does. He comes
Orca.
In as a screenwriter, and he does the equivalent of that thing where you look in the mirror and take one thing off.
Yep.
You know, he's like, let's remove the whale from this. It's just too much, you know. It's too much unnecessary blood.
It was originally Twilight, New Moon, and then another moon. And you said, no.
Yeah.
Just the one moon.
What I remember from that first gig that my brother and I ever had was that at one point, because we were doing all the writing in the production offices of the movie, and at one point we were told that we couldn't order any more sushi on the movie's budget because we were eating too much. So we were living it up, if you can imagine, getting as much takeout sushi as you can eat.
That's got to be a lot of sushi.
Yeah, it was. It was. My brother and I always would order, I would not necessarily eat, but order too much sushi. I remember in New York there used to be these all-you-can-eat sushi places, and in order to keep you from ordering too much sushi and wasting it, they would say you have to pay for any sushi that is left over on your plate. So what my brother and I do is occasionally when we would order too much because we were very gluttonous, we would secret it about our persons and then walk to the bathroom and flush it down the toilet. So we'd slip it down our shirt cuffs.
Would you
and
ever
into our crotches and then have to go and dispose of it. So
would you ever pretend that you were freeing the fish that had been imprisoned? Back to the water with you. Swim free.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like, while in the bathroom on our own, yes. But we wouldn't do that in front of the sushi chef because that would lead to our immediate expulsion.
Well, it seems like a weird restaurant where the toilet would be right in front of the sushi chef. How did they get a sanitary grade? That's what I wonder.
They were grandfathered in.
Okay.
We should also clarify that Chris's brother, of course, is Jeremy Piven, and that's how he got the mercury poisoning that's so bedeviling.
Kept him off the Broadway stage, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that true? My God.
Well, he said he had mercury poisoning.
He claimed he had mercury
poisoning.
Is that like a Michael Douglas's cancer thing where he claimed he got it from, you know,
I do know, Stuart, and I thought for a second, should I pimp you into having to actually say it? But I don't want you to. So. Yeah.
So how did that? So what happened after? So a very pretty sequel came out. What happened after?
It was
that?
A massive hit, and everything is history after that. What happened to that? Okay, so then I remember Ants was kind of our next accredited work. Where my brother and I were. This is actually kind of Hollywoodish. We were eating breakfast at Hugo's on Santa Monica, which is a kind of a very like bit of an institution. And a guy I know was there, and he said that they wanted a writer to rewrite a movie about ants. And he had just seen this. And the idea had come about from this National Geographic documentary about a termite colony that was attacked by ants eventually in the end. And I remembered that particular episode really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I'd actually also just ordered a couple of books about ants because I did really care about ants at the time. Or care about it? I don't know. I was interested. Uh-huh. They were cool. So there I was, you know. It's kind of like the Lana Turner at, what is it, Shraps?
I think it was at Shraps, story. Yeah.
Except with ants and a
Shraps Hugus. Or Shrabs? Crabs.
Shraps?
Scabs. She was at a place called Scabs.
Scabs. God.
Yeah. She really stuck out because everyone else was covered in scabs and sores.
It was that leper restaurant.
Yeah, it was a long-time L.A. institution for a long time. L.A.pers, it's called. Also Scabs. Yeah.
So that was next in this whirlwind through my glorious career.
And what now? You came in.
That was phase two of your career, because it seems like phase four of your career should have been ants. Mm-hmm. Again, Dan, call back to phase four.
Call back to it.
The only movie
This is a joke. Dan is calling back to a joke before we started recording.
Is it? I can't remember.
So, and you came on, you were rewriting someone else on ants, or they wanted people to write a movie about ants?
They were kind of, they were mostly throwing away a script. And so I think in the space of 6 weeks, we were supposed to write a script that Woody Allen would sign on to.
Because I assume the original script he had written, and it was about an elderly ant that falls in love with a grub. And they said, we can't have this.
It was. Had I known that it was going to be so problematic, I probably would have done it anyway, because I sort of wanted to have a career. But at the time, he was just strange and not deeply strange and upsetting.
Yeah.
So then we did a lot of that, and then that process, you know, animated films take forever, so this took about 2.5 years, and. And the strangest thing about that, okay, was that for the first time in our lives, we flew on a private jet.
Oh, wow.
Woody Allen's private jet?
And no, it was DreamWorks' private jet, because DreamWorks was a hugely going concern at the time. But the irony of that, or I don't know, the careful what you wish for of that, was that the jet would leave at 6 in the morning from Burbank and return at noon. So you'd have to wake up at 5 o'clock or 4:45 to drive to this jet, to fly up for an hour to Palo Alto, to work for 3 hours, and then fly down again within the same morning, which was completely bananas and not as fun as it really should be to fly in a private jet.
I think the coolest part of Chris's private jet story is hearing the waves crashing in the background.
Yeah, I was about to say.
that's my sound machine, which I...
okay.
Listen, I blame the Blue Yeti microphone, which just picks up the Pacific Ocean.
It's just too good.
So well. Yeah.
Describe that private jet to us. Like, how many people would fit on it?
I guess about 10 people would fit on it. You know, sometimes it was like, oh, there's Hans Zimmer. He's coming with us this time. And he'd be like, hey, Hans Zimmer. And he was actually really nice.
Oh, your boys are flying on the jet today? We're going to talk about the ants movie. Ooh. I have to assume that's what he sounds like. I don't know. I've never heard his voice.
Yeah.
He sounds a bit like that, actually. but he was very nice. And let me see, you get some nice sandwiches. You get free sandwiches. Jeffrey Katzenberg is on the plane too. So you never really feel as though you can totally kick back. Because he's so incredibly on the ball about everything that you don't feel as though you can actually enjoy yourself.
He's really watching the plane sushi budget to make sure that you don't go over.
He's like, I know the trick where you flush it down, Chris, and this plane does not have a system that will handle that kind of roughish in the toilet.
You cannot have all you can eat. This is amazing. This is like this is your life. I was kind of joking when I posted the New Moon poster on Twitter in answer to your call for subjects. But here we are.
Yeah, well, that joke quickly became Stuart's lifeline to something to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm actually loving looking at what appears to be a kitchen storage shelf. Are you in a oh, is that a closet? Are you in a closet?
I record in a closet, yeah.
Okay.
Is that the basement of Henschelin's? I've never actually asked.
This is the office / storage room in Charlene and my apartment. That's why you can see boxes of board games in the background and restaurant quality shelving, basically.
Tortilla chips?
Yep, restaurant quality tortilla chips.
Oh, man.
You would bite into them and you'd be like, I can't buy this at the store. I can only get these at restaurants.
I have to get this wholesale.
It's not delivery. It's,
yep.
It's Doritos.
It's de restaurant style. So,
So Christopher,
yes, Grandma.
Please refer to me.
This got very serious all of a sudden.
So, Christopher, what are your intentions towards my daughter?
So, you are hot off of Ants.
Yeah.
What's next for the?
What's next? Yeah,
what's next for the brothers?
Chris White. Well, let me see. Then we kind of. Then American Pie happened because for some reason we went in for a meeting to direct.
I mean, you guys probably wanted the job.
We'd never done it before. We wanted to direct pretty much anything, and so we for some reason, I think because we thought we wouldn't get the job because we never directed a thing, went in and kind of pitched them on how we would change the script. Along with Adam Hirsch, the writer, and the idea was to kind of make it a bit more female friendly. Although in retrospect, there are problematic elements about American Pie as well. I'm actually now noticing a trail of very questionable things in my career. Woody Allen, cyber crime.
Yeah. I mean, it also means that with Ants that you wrote something that you wrote for Sylvester Stallone too, right?
That's true. And I didn't get to meet Sylvester Stallone, but for a while I would read opposite all of the characters because they didn't, of course, read together. So I read opposite J-Lo, Gene Hackman, Woody Allen. I'm trying to remember who else. Oh, Sharon Stone. So that was kind of bananas as well.
That's amazing.
You know what? Today I tweeted about how like I am nearly 42 years old.
Congratulations!
You did it.
Thank you. And in spite of, it's coming up soon, June 19th, everyone. Just throwing it out there.
Juneteenth.
That's what they're celebrating is Dan's birthday.
That's also the 4 year.
Just happened to be on the same day.
That's the 4 year anniversary of my bar Hinterlands. Which birthday is more momentous? I don't know. 4 years is a big deal for a business.
But
I thought you were going to say it was the fourth anniversary of Dan's 38th birthday.
I tweeted out today about how I'm 42 years old, and despite media telling me that this is a thing that men do, I have never masturbated by fucking any sort of food.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought to myself, is my friend Chris going to see this and be distressed in some way that I am
undercutting? Then I assume you're next.
Dan isn't jacking it the way he wants him to?
The siren song of food has called as.
Because I assume the next thought you had was, why haven't I done that?
Maybe pie does feel like sex.
Yeah, I mean the movie asked that question. You need to answer it, Dan.
That's actually, if you check the IMDb goofs. Sorry to bring this up, Chris. For American Pie, in the goofs it says, in actuality, human vaginas and pies do not feel particularly similar.
No, they're quite unlike. I just never found the right pie
on the record.
You heard it here, yeah.
Yeah, we just brought you here to trap you into finally admitting.
Actually, the only thing I'm thinking about as you recount that anecdote is how young you guys are. Like, I'm 50 years old. It's bizarre. I always used to be the youngest person in the room. Around the time that I'm describing, I was super young, you know?
Yeah, because you must have been, what, like 30 at the time?
I was 29 when I started directing American.
Wow.
I turned 30, I think, on the set. Which is so young. It's ridiculous.
That's 30 under 30 material right there.
Uh-huh. Yep. Just made it.
Did you feel like the older person on the set because the actors were so much younger? Like, was it?
I did feel old relative to them because these guys were like often in their first movie. I mean, the great thing about making that was that the studio was also making Babe, Pig in the City and Meet Joe Black, which were costing them a lot of money, and we cost nothing. And as a result, we were just kind of they just kept their eyes were on other balls, mm-hmm. as it were. Uh-huh. So we just got away with a lot, and we got relatively little critique as we went through the process, which was amazing.
And
the other experience I had. Oh, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, and despite Babe, Pig in the City being a tremendous movie, like both of those films did much, much worse.
Yeah, it was very strange. I certainly don't take any pride in that. I don't think it has anything to do with anything other than the kind of strange tastes of the public.
I mean, Meet Joe Black had its own problems.
Problems. yeah, its own thing.
In fact, that was 3 hours long. Being one
I think
of
that's
them.
Part of it. They took an hour and a half movie and remade it as a movie twice that length.
Wasn't one of the big selling points of Meet Joe Black that when it premiered, it had the trailer for The Phantom Menace before it?
Yeah, it was, I think, yeah.
Oh, really?
And famously, people went, watched, like, paid for a full ticket, watched the trailer, and then bounced.
Yeah.
And then left. Wow.
So American Pie was a big hit. Like, that was huge.
It was crazy. It was certainly unexpected. I'll tell you how I know that the studio didn't expect that at all is that somebody strolled in from the studio about halfway through shooting and said, "Great news. We just sold the foreign rights for $4 million. So, like, our downside is covered," which it didn't mean anything to me. But it ended up making 100-something million foreign. Because they like a laugh, too, you know?
It's everybody likes us. A laugh.
Mm-hmm. Although Mitt Romney lives for laughter, I've heard.
So that's like, how old a soundbite is that? Is that from 2012?
I don't know. I remember that from our days together at The Daily
yeah,
Show.
He said he lived for laughter.
A long time ago.
He lives for laughter.
Yeah. Wow.
My experiences with American Pie, I remember seeing it in the theater probably in, high school? Or maybe right my freshman year
of college.
You guys
probably had to sneak in.
I was definitely in high school because everyone in my high school was talking about it. And through some twist of fate, my mom saw it before I did. And she was like, "You got to see this movie." She thought it was really funny.
I remember that.
She's like, "You see Shannon Elizabeth's boobs. You've got to see it." And I was like, "Mom, all right."
She's like, "You're horny."
And
you're a horny teen.
And I guess my second thing was I remember bartending one afternoon and Eddie K. Thomas came in with a date. And was not very nice to me, but that's okay.
Really?
I'm an asshole.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. It's fine. This was years ago. But
Chris
this is the part of the podcast where we air out some dirty laundry. So Dan, can you play Dirty Laundry by Don Henley for me?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the soundboard cue.
You know, I've never had any bad experiences with any of the cast members. I've never met any of them, so I haven't had the opportunity.
I've had the good experience of watching Chris Klein in Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Yeah, that was a great experience.
Yes, that was another painful episode for me.
I mean, he's great at the
He's great. It is
a tremendously astounding performance. I don't know quite what's happening in it, but I love it.
It's a lot happening. It's a lot going on.
It reminds me of we just did our live show this past weekend about Howard the Duck, Tim Robbins' performance in that, where it's like you kind of get the feeling he was like, "Nobody cares about what I'm doing. I'm just going to go crazy."
Plum loco.
So you did a movie with a bunch of younger actors. Do you keep in touch with anyone? Some of them have had very huge careers.
Yes, we are co-producing a movie with Natasha Lyonne. Has a new production company.
Oh wow!
And we are doing something with her. So I see her around once in a while. She's great. I mean, I still think of them as like kids. I saw Sean Scott a little while ago. That was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I met them all at a really like amazing time in their lives when everything was about to happen. Which actually, this is maybe the segue to leap past a lot of just dross and get to Twilight Saga, sure. New Moon, because let's talk about our paths. Let's talk about Case Do.
Oh boy, okay. This is when the real dirty laundry comes out.
Tay Lau.
So Dan, play dirty laundry again.
I don't know you think we're going to afford the music cue for that, but okay.
I was actually thinking about the other day about making that movie, and the utter shock I had when I think we were all flying to shoot at the around the same time. It was something where we all had to fly out of LAX at the same time. Case Do, Our Paths, Tay Lau, myself, bodyguards for Case Do and Our Paths, and the paparazzi were chasing them and us because I was in the same SUV, but chasing them down the street like what vans, cars, everything. Like I've never seen anything like it. It was astounding and it was genuinely frightening.
Was it like
to see like what it
was it like the beginning of Hard Day's Night and you guys were laughing and just like pulling pranks, you know. Fake beards and things like that.
Totally just like that. Girls screaming, running after me. No, it was creeps. It was paparazzi, just the worst form of life. And I thought like this is not good. This cannot be good for a person. One way or the other, this bizarre exposure to a strange kind of, and they knew on some level, like Rob and Kristen like have done really great stuff since, but they knew on some level that what was happening to them was bore no relation to who they actually were or what they were doing, or frankly, the sort of import, the real import of what they were doing. So it was equally grotesque and bizarre. And then if they said that they didn't want it or that, they wish things were otherwise, they would get sort of excoriated. Mm-hmm. But it did seem like a really unpleasant way to live.
I remember when Kristen Stewart was on The Daily Show when I worked there as a guest, and just like leaving one night and the guest entrance, I don't know how, I guess they would announce the schedule ahead of time sometimes, but it was just like the guest entrance was swarmed with this huge crowd of people who were only there to get her to like sign things so that they could sell them. And I remember leaving late that night, and as I was leaving, like turning back, because there was a huge SUV parked outside the front door, which was very nondescript. The door the staff used, like, we would not even know the Daily Show was located there. I guess if there wasn't a huge sign above it that said, that had John that said, if you're looking for Larry Flint's Hustler Club, go around the corner. But which was for many years the billboard that was right up was John pointing in that direction. But seeing her leaving the front door and getting into that car that like she had to wait for a long time and then use the other entrance just to like just so that she wouldn't be mobbed and destroyed, and she just seemed so incredibly like sad and lonely. It was terrible. Anyway, that's when I reached out my hand to her, and we had kind of like a Roman holiday style, night on the town.
Wow, was that when you guys had your thing?
Yeah, if by thing you mean lawsuit, yes. But no, it was just like, it was one of those moments where I was like, because I like the spotlight to a certain extent, but one of those moments where I was like, oh, I'm so glad that I'm like a nobody in this moment,
Well, it's that like I. This is gonna seem so absurd coming on the heels of superstar Kristen Stewart off of superstar series Twilight, but obviously podcast fame is the smallest fucking slice of fame one could ever have, but it is very strange. Like. You get like a taste of having people know who you are when you do like a live show or something, right? And like you go and do these things. And don't get me wrong, listeners, I really appreciate that people care about what we do, and I love talking to people. But it is very strange to have people excited to see you because you're like, wait a minute. I know I'm me.
Like,
so why do you care about
that? I'm not even excited to see me.
I know how I am. This is not worth it. Like, and to imagine that like times a billion, like it must be the loneliest life to lead to go through that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it must be very strange. Actually, what you're saying reminded me of when I write a character and anyone has any genuine emotional response to that character, and I just think, well, this is some bullshit that I I know it's wrong to think.
I think that's.
I remember I was sitting in my underwear and I typed this. I don't.
I think that's the secret behind like George Lucas and J.K. Rowling and stuff like that, is that people are like, but what about this tiny detail? And they're like, I don't know, I just made it up someday. And then I don't care. I don't think about that stuff. Like, and of course, J.K. Rowling is dedicated to bit by bit destroying everything that she's built. But whereas George Lucas tried to as much as he could and just could not accomplish it. But I think it was when J.K. Rowling started talking about that. Was it a real thing when she talked about how her wizards would poop in their pants and then magic away the poop?
I think was that was an assistant. I think it was an assistant, but it, you know, I think it tracks. Like, if you look at the novels, there's nothing in there that says they don't shit their pants and then magic
they never,
it away.
Are there any scenes of Harry going to the bathroom? I don't think so.
Moaning Myrtle, like, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a ghost in the bathroom.
Why did she live in the toilet? Anyway,
that's where she died.
She
Dan.
Died there, dude.
Yeah, come on.
Have some respect for a ghost.
Did she say whether the wizards would poop in their pants?
Well, where is they pooping, Dan? Just out a window?
Well, I thought it was just like wherever they were. So like,
yeah, like in a tuba.
I don't remember the controversy, but was this all to prevent people having the image of wizards sitting on a toilet? Like, was it? That was too undignified.
You know,
so they had to magic away their poop.
It was.
Let's not talk.
I think she was
her.
Talking about a day. She was talking about days of old when knights were bold and toilets hadn't been invented. You know, when people just dropped their loads by roads and they were quite contented. But wizards, of course, would magic it away.
Yeah, she said some tremendously terrible things. So let's not even bother making fun of her.
Okay, so Twilight, New Moon. You've shot it what, in Portland?
No, Vancouver.
Canadian Portland.
Oddly, though, after a visit to Portland to see the original. Locations so that we could copy them kind of brick by brick, basically. So we rebuilt a facade of Bella's house because everything is watched very closely by the Twihards. And you will know if you've made a mistake, you will be called out before actually the movie comes out, because they'll see pictures from on set. So there's a huge controversy when Edward's SUV was brown and not whatever color it was supposed to be before that. But that was the deal that we got from Volvo, man.
Now, I've seen, I think, the first three of these movies. Maybe just the first two.
That's Twilight, New Moon, and Twilight, The Search for Spock.
Mm-hmm. I apologize, Chris, for not remembering which is in which. Is the baseball scene?
No, there are no witches at all.
Is there
you're thinking True Blood season Dan. 2, Dan.
Which one has the baseball in it? Was that yours?
That would be the first one. I could not, for the life of me, think of how to shoot that.
Well, that's what scene. I was about to wonder. Like, I was about to ask. Like, when you get a source material that has, let's say, difficult yes to visualize elements like sparkly vampires, what do you do in those situations?
I think the only way that you can actually survive is to take it all quite seriously. So I do remember saying something like, so we're gonna revamp. No, I didn't say it that way, actually. That would have been great.
You winked.
And then you winked at people. With a gleam
we're
in
gonna
your eye.
We're gonna try a new look for the sparkle on the vampires. it was to take it all quite seriously. Well, I think I told you guys the story about how I didn't want Taylor Swift to be in the movie because it would throw people too much from the reality of the movie.
They would say two Taylors in one movie. Impossible. What is this, Fiddler on the Roof? There's only one Taylor. Fiddler on the Roof. Still.
What is this, Tinker Taylor Taylor Spy?
Take it very seriously, like, you know. It's
Tinker Taylor Taylor Spy. We're out of soldiers. Can I throw in an extra Taylor? Well, it's not really the same thing. Please, my boss is going to fire me if I don't close this account.
What if I give you three Taylors?
Look, everyone knows that it's Colin Firth who did it anyway. So just take this extra Taylor. So sorry, but you were saying. So what was Taylor Swift?
Very seriously going into the designing of the Volturi you know, palace thing. You know, but like you got to take it everything with dead seriousness. Which actually is also like it would have been lame to be sort of ironic about the way that I was making it. Actually, at the time, I remember thinking like this is going to be, you know, like the first one was kind of poppy and cool and fun, and this was going to be sort of widescreen, sort of lush presentation.
It's going to be the Empire Strikes Back to the first one, Star Wars, where you can like deepen it and like make it like a little more sophisticated.
And Michael Sheen was in this one, right?
Michael Sheen was, and he was so much fun.
I feel like he's like the perfect guy for that kind of thing, because he, man, he's, oh, I love that guy.
I mean,
go for it.
Doolittle, he came out unscathed.
He really just, he enjoyed himself, but without kind of being like one of the sort of British guys that you hire who are just kind of chewing the scenery and winking at the audience at the same time. He was deeply into it. He said he was basing his character on the Blue Meanies from Yellow Submarine.
That is amazing.
And then Dakota Fanning, lovely Dakota Fanning, was a huge Twihard, and so we were able to get her to be in this movie. And it's like a relatively small part, but you know she has like five lines, but is amazing and kind of creepy.
Actually, there's a lot I don't remember from the movie, but I remember her very well from it, even though it was not a huge.
Why is that?
Just because it's been a while, and you know, I've seen the other movies in the series so many times, but I've only seen that one the one time. So you know, I'm like, oh, is it like the scene in Twilight 4 when they're fighting over that lava pit? No, that's different. What about the scene where he's climbing the Empire State Building and he's got Bella in his hand? No, wait, hold on, that's King Kong.
I think I heard you say the best thing to say was that you didn't want to see it again after your first experience in the cinema because nothing would be.
Oh,
as
I was.
Great
I know home
that.
Viewing. It was just not going to match up to that same experience of being there.
You
the way
get the
it was meant
energy
to be
of the crowd, you know. The crowd in the theater.
Oh yeah, it was just such a beautiful experience. I was like, I don't think my system can handle it a second time.
So you're saying you forgot all about it, and what can I remind you?
Well, I remember. So was it in the novel that the werewolves don't like to wear shirts when they're people?
It's a good question.
Yes, I think that's right. I think so. It wasn't just because I like seeing cute boys with no shirts on.
I mean, that's
but,
fair.
No, it's because they run super hot. They're feverish, right? All the time. Mm-hmm. They run like 106 feet at all times. That's
that makes sense.
Obviously. Yeah, it makes
I mean,
sense.
It must
they're
be
hot-blooded. Check it and see.
That, like you're saying, you're taking it really seriously, and it feels like that sounds like the best way to have fun with a project like that probably is to take it seriously and to really like get into the details of it. And want it to be as cool as you can make it.
I think I wanted it to be as good for the fans as I could make it, as much of a fan pleasing experience. But actually, I also remember being deeply depressed the whole time.
Oh, no.
Sorry to bring you back.
But
there.
That for a while, that it used to be that way. So American Pie, I was super happy while I was making it. It was just the best thing, and I was like, "Oh, this is for me. This is like a filmmaker's life for me." And then every movie afterwards, I just kind of realized how much I could screw up or how things could go wrong and how often you were foiled doing it and trying to do what you want to do. And so it became this incredibly stressful experience. And I usually fall into a depression at some point during the process.
Do you think?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. Ellie, do you want to?
No, you go ahead. I'll save my question.
Well, I wanted to ask, you know, like not to I don't want to make you feel any worse,
oh boy.
Chris.
But is this really, if anything that needs this many mea culpas ahead of time, I don't know.
No.
This
like,
doesn't sound good.
Like anyone I know like, who's
but,
been
but,
in show business.
But how do you sleep at night?
How dare you?
Basically, anyone I know who's been in show business for a long time seems very, very weary all the time. And I was just wondering what you thought was the most sort of pleasant and like personally rewarding experience, whether or not it was regardless of product.
Well, I think as a part of filmmaking, I think editing is my joy. I love it. It's like video games and puzzles and watching movies and you know, finding little Easter eggs all the time, and that's really great. You know, specifically, I guess making American Pie is hard to beat in terms of just how much fun it was from beginning to end, because not knowing all the things that could go wrong, or you know, not having any expectations whatsoever. And then, you know, about a boy, I think the final result was really sort of delightful. And the way that people received it, that was the super gratifying
experience.
Well, I was gonna ask before. You've made kind of like big budget, kind of big scope movies. And you've made smaller kind of human-sized movies. And I wondered if you felt more comfortable with the one or the other. With the human sized ones, or with the ones where you get to do whatever you want, or not whatever you want because you're fighting a lot.
I think I've figured it out now, which is my ideal movie to direct now would be two people sitting at a table talking. Like, I don't want. I realize that the reason that I'm not particularly good at directing action is that I don't really like it. I mean, I get it; it's fine, but you know, like the last movie I made, Operation Finale, I had a couple of car chases in it, and I was like, okay, well, are they going to catch them or they won't? And so why don't we get to the part where they do or they don't catch them, rather than having to do all the stuff where, you know, cars are doing unlikely things. I think I really like the small ones. And the problem with directing the really huge ones is you think you've got all of these amazing – you do have incredible resources at your disposal. But the stress level is so high because having spent so much money on these things, the studio is freaking out constantly. You know, quite reasonably expecting you to make a movie that will pay back at least part of their investment. So that's super stressful. So I think little movies are the way to go these days.
And I was going to ask, with having worked on Twilight New Moon, even though it was a kind of a different role, you then went on to work on Star Wars Rogue One. Did any of your experiences working in an existing like universe or an existing like novel inform how you approached working on a Star Wars movie?
I mean, that was a bit different just because I from age seven, I was completely all about Star Wars all the time. Although it was only really the original trilogy, so I was like, I feel like ultra orthodox.
Okay.
You weren't pitching on that Sebulba spinoff?
The bulb. That's about when he was a detective.
Like a Grand Admiral Thrawn origin picture or something?
Nope. Wanted no part of it. You know, I knew what I liked. So actually, really, there I kind of knew I was the choir that I was preaching to. So that was kind of great. You know, I think, like, that's as close as I've ever been to making a fan film, right? It was fan fic, although not slash fic, but you know.
I don't know.
No, I can imagine that being fun because, like, I remember there was a time that I wrote a Simpsons spec script, and it was like, at that point, The Simpsons had already been on the air for like 16, 17 years or whatever, and I was like, this is the worst thing to write a spec script for because no one's going to care. No one's going to look at this and be like, yeah, that's the hip new show that you're writing a spec script for. But like, it was also just so much more enjoyable because I'm like, okay, this is a thing that I grew up with and I like feel like I know who these people are.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that was, I should say, in terms of sort of peak experiences, just getting to work on that was up there because it was what I felt like I'd sort of been heading toward my whole life, really. And I just like that. And one of the most intense experiences in Hollywood for me was to go to that first meeting where I knew that there was a possibility I could write a Star Wars movie, not knowing what it was going to be because everything is like super top secret or whatever. And then finding out it was going to be for, you know, the story of the opening crawl. I was like, this is sort of full circle, like weird parallel universe experience. That was cool.
Cool.
Okay. And that's...
All right. Okay.
Well, that's the way Stuart ends his interview.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool. And then takes a drink.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you want to ask us anything?
Well, no.
Now you get your questions.
Well, wait. This is now we have to do the thing where it goes. We go, what's next for Chris Weitz?
Putting children to bed, which involves a lot of shouting somehow.
I get it.
And so many, telling people the same thing over and over again. It's just fucking
ridiculous. Oh, half my day is me going, Sammy, brush your teeth, 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 brush your teeth. And he's like, Daddy, let me tell you about, brush your teeth. Let me tell you about this thing, brush your teeth. Do you think a snake could beat an owl in a fight? Brush your teeth. Like, that's the, and that we did do research
but
on that.
That sounds like
yeah,
fun.
It turns,
at least he's saying something.
It turns out that the snake and the owl, it depends on the snake, it depends on the owl, really. Mm-hmm.
Well, definitely if you go by the Mexican flag, right, there's an eagle kicking the shit out of a snake.
Yeah, yeah. But I think,
so I'd imagine that another raptor would be able to handle
it. But in
it.
The colonial flag before Mexico gained independence shows the eagle paying off the snake.
Oh, wow.
To throw the fight.
Oh, it was all kayfabe.
Yeah, yeah, it's all
flag.
Yeah, it's all yeah, the snake is the snake. Actually, the thing is the snake is the baby face and the eagle is the heel, and it's all being set up so that you're like, snake, come on, snake, win it back. But they never made the next flag. So, I guess we never.
I mean, he doesn't even have arms and legs and wings and shit. Like, that's unfair. You got to root for him.
Yeah, it's true. He's the underdog.
Well, here's the thing: is like, do I have questions for you? It's like this weird experience of the fact that I have heard you speak more than you will probably ever hear me speak, right? Mm-hmm. And because we've had our conversations together, but I've heard hundreds of hours of you guys talking to each other. Like, I know everything I need to know. You know,
I've been meaning to talk to you about that, Chris. Mm. If you could just tape yourself and email it to me, that would be
just talking and talking.
Just, little, just to work out the
just
imbalance.
A payback. Yeah.
So okay, so let's say the Flophouse movie is getting made. You're going to meet with us.
Yep.
What's your take? What's your angle on it?
Oh wow.
Yeah. Okay. I'd say I'd probably say we know about the podcast. Mm-hmm. What about the podcasters? What do they do in their lives outside of the podcast, and how it'd be kind of a Shakespeare in Love maybe kind of thing.
Cool.
and like maybe it would be about an episode, but how your kind of action packed lives outside of it influence the way that episode goes.
I like
maybe
it.
We do a little sort of like a weird sort of narrative jumping back and forth. Like I was just watching this movie Assassin by what is it? It's a Japanese film by Shinoda. Or like, yeah, some kind of like Japanese samurai film where they're like talking about the first time they met somebody and then you flash back to that. Yeah, I think I'd like that. Or maybe an origin story, actually.
Oh, wow.
Maybe how you three guys met.
Be like a rise of, yeah. One of those rise ofs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping he was that you were going to say, Chris, that Dan inherits an old movie theater and we all have to go live in it.
I think that's the sitcom pitch.
Oh, right.
Well, I mean, the real great one is like, it has always been where I sort of play this kind of, this long con and like, you know, befriend you guys and eventually take my terrible revenge.
Yeah.
You know, I've joked about this before, but that even that is part of the long con. It's just to, you know, to really sort of get you guys to trust me.
Yep. I know what you did 8 years ago, 9 years ago.
I know what you did on that podcast, and so does everybody else.
I know the thing that you did that did not harm my career at all, because who gives a shit about these three assholes?
It's a long title, but, you know, okay.
My filthy take on I know you did was always... I blew who you did last summer. I don't know why. And that was like a joke that I told myself.
Yeah. The problem is with Twitter, the jokes that I tell myself are now the jokes I tell everyone.
Unfortunately,
that is a problem.
Although, Dan...
Actually, which reminds me that I saw a picture of the Yoda statue outside of Lucasfilm in the Presidio with the words "Matter, Black Lives Do" written in green, spray painted in green underneath it. And my first thought was, "Where were you when I needed you, you green fuck?" Because when I was calling out the Empire for white supremacy, I was getting all kinds of hate tweets
oh, yeah,
and emails and stuff. Where was Yoda?
Yeah, I like that graffiti because it's they use that Yoda used green, so you know for sure it's Yoda. That's the only indicator.
Yeah, right. It's reassuring. It's the only color you can see, actually.
Oh, wow. That's kind of sad, actually.
Well, that's why he's on Dagobah. It's like very green.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's big on branding.
No wonder he was hitting R2-D2 with his stick so much. He couldn't see him. He was just trying to figure out where that guy was.
Well, guys, I think we're winding down, and I'm getting really hot in this unair-conditioned
Dan's
room.
Dan's tired. We went through a chunk of Chris's career. We started a new celebrity feud, Chris versus Yoda.
I will have Chris Weitz back on the show anytime he wants to come back. I just, you know.
Gentlemen, it's been an honor.
Thank you so much for being with us and letting us needle you about your career while learning great things about your career.
It's great. I think I may have missed bath time, which would be the best news.
That's kind of why I scheduled the podcast when I did is because I was trying to skip bath time.
Yeah, but it's your bath, Stuart.
I know, but I don't like baths.
You're like, oh, sorry, I missed bath time. I guess it's Stinky Stew in bed again tonight.
Before we wrap up, we should mention again that we just posted our live show on YouTube, and that's a live show that is for charity where we talk about Howard the Duck, and I think as of the day that this releases, we're still accepting receipts of donations of $20 or more. You can go to flophousepodcast.com to find out information about that. We've already received an overwhelming amount of donations, which is amazing. I'm kind of blown away. Anything else you guys want to add?
We've had over 900 emails sent to us with proof of donation. And each of those is a minimum $20 donation because they're raffle entries. So you can do the math, but that's the minimum of what we've made. And I mean, eventually we will.
Well, not what we've made. We're going to. It's in donations.
Well, yes,
none
yes.
of that money
made for made for
no,
charity.
I want everyone to be clear. The money did not go to us. It is for charity.
Well, I don't know how it could have, Elliot, because we were sending people directly to charities. But sure, let's make it clear.
But the charity we were sending them to
charity.
Was the Flophouse Institute for Special Charity Studies.
All for charity, we donated 10K ourselves to charity. We're so proud of all of the listeners who donated. We're so glad that they were able to do so. Yes, we for the raffle we will be accepting proof of donation the day that this drops. Still, that will be the last day that we'll be accepting it for the raffle, but you know, for your own karma, for your own beliefs, to help people, you can donate whenever you like.
There are other reasons
to
donate
to
besides to just win Flophouse merchandise, as strange as that sounds.
Yes.
So please keep doing it.
But thank you, yes, Stuart. If you go to the Flophouse YouTube page, which is youtube.com/C/theFlophousePodcast, or you can just Google it.
Dan, are you leaving the door open for people to send you receipts of donations, and in exchange you'll send them nudes? Because I think there's an audience for it. It's not just me. I think there's other people that'd be into that.
Not just you. Thank you. We can talk off air.
By the way, Dan, I am not in the market for that. So please don't. Okay. Please don't accept any receipts.
You
from
have
me.
Increased the. I'm not gonna say that. I was gonna increase the. You're increasing the likelihood of me sending you nude, but I don't even want
no,
to joke
please
about
do not
non-consensual
do
nude sending. So, yeah. No. Thank you all. Yes. Thank you all for your amazing generosity. And that show is up to watch whenever you might want to. It is much longer than we intended, so it's better to watch it now.
Story
after
the podcast.
The fact, when you can stop it and go do other stuff in the middle.
Maybe skip the third or fourth time we talk about whether ducks can have boobs or not.
Yeah.
And so, Chris, do you have anything that you'd like to either plug or increase awareness of before we go?
No, I mean, I certainly don't have anything to plug, and I think that people are aware of what they should be aware of exactly right now. So I don't think anything I could add would actually, I mean, I'm going to, you know, I keep on thinking my next tweet is really going to push, civil rights over the top in this country.
So many times, especially during the quarantine, I've had to be like, hey, pay attention to your children. There's no way that the tweet you are working on right now is going to get Trump removed from office or end racism. So you might as well do something else. I'm like, you're right, brain. You're right.
Yeah.
You can try that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We love you all. Be safe. Do good in the world. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin, thanking our very special guest, who is...
Chris Weitz. Thank you, guys. Thank you all out there in Flophouse land, all the flops at sea.
Good night, everyone, if you're like Chris and are listening to us as you go to sleep.
Shh. Bye.
We are the host of My Brother and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother and Me, the hunt is on!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.